there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Tony.
Michael.
I was thinking for this episode, let's go with plan D, but reverse points 3 and 4, skip over 5, finishing with 2. How does that sound?
Please, no talking, I'm in the breaking.
From iHeart Podcast, 101 Studios, and Sports Illustrated Studios, this is
Choosing Sides. F1.
Talk to me, Goose.
Blake, welcome. Give us a little bit of insight of your career journey, who you are, and what you do today.
My name is Blake Hinsey, former F1 performance engineer turned content creator. Bite size, chop.
Wow. So, Michael.
Tony.
Today, with the help from our amazing expert, Blake Hinsey, I will put forward to you that the absolute best kind of F1 fan you can be is a game strategist. Huh. That racing strategy is the most fascinating thing that I think you can imagine. And it's just the right prism for you to approach your F1 fandom.
Okay, well, I believe you and I trust you, but you can't control what's in my heart.
Well, we'll see about that. Open your heart.
If you want to watch a Formula One race and understand what's going on, you have two options. You can watch the race lap by lap and observe what's happening and say, wasn't that great? But one of the best things about Formula One is the suspense. And a lot of people get a lot of satisfaction of having an understanding of how the game can unfold and the variables. And they want to know what's going to happen next because they're probably watching it with their friend. And it's like, watch out for Carlos here. He needs to stop soon for new tires. And without that kind of context, you're kind of sitting there thinking, well, what's going to happen next? I think Formula One very much has elements of chess, especially when you consider strategy. You know, you can have a plan, and if somebody does a different move and you do not react to that move, you can end up at a disadvantage and it forces your hand and it can put you in a difficult spot. You know, that you may not have all the information you need to make that decision, but do you make a pit stop to cover that car or do you stay out and stick to plan A? Which one pays off?
I keep hearing all this talk about race strategy. Plan A, plan B, plan C. Isn't F1 a race? Start here, finish here. Doesn't seem very complicated to me.
So yes, F1 is a race. Start here, finish here. But there's so much that happens in between that formation lap and that checkered flag, which is the flag that gets waved when they cross the finish line. It's also so much more than just the driver. So during F1 weekends, you will hear the commentators or armchair experts like myself say things like, oh, we're probably going to be expecting a one or two stop strategy, or we've taken the data from the previous race last year and we've got a better understanding of where we're going. You're going to hear a lot of that. And the strategies are very much tied to things like tire compound choices, the different racetracks, the weather forecast. And we'll dedicate a whole episode and dive deeper into the tires.
Please. I can't wait. That episode's where the rubber meets the road. Ouch.
Moving swiftly on. There's also things during the race weekend that you can't foresee for. So there's these unforeseeable things like, did we have a crash? Do we have a safety car? Do we have a virtual safety car? Is the weather completely different than what we expected? You'll see during the free practice sessions or quali, maybe it's, you know, sunshine and hot weather. And then for the race on Sunday, it's all rain and cloudy and gloomy. Teams could also have a bad pit stop strategy. Something in the wheel gun could have blocked in and they don't have a 2 or 3 second pit stop, but they have a 4, 5, 6, 7 pit stop again, which throws everything out the window.
Ricciardo is sat there waiting. Did he make the call? Did the team make the call? Whoever made the call, the tyres weren't ready.
So there's a myriad of things that come into play. The other thing to note is that the head of the team strategy and their whole team are sometimes planning months, if not sometimes actually years in advance, in terms of what this race is going to look like. They know the idea for the strategy team is that when they land on a Wednesday or Thursday for the race, they know what their strategy is or what their strategy options are going to be.
I have some thoughts.
Yeah.
But my first question is, you said the head of strategy. Does that mean there's multiple people devoted to the game strategy?
Yeah. So Formula One teams have several strategists. There is a person who is responsible for, you know, taking all the information. You have, you know, assistant strategists that are looking at a specific car or looking at a specific competitor's car in relation to you, and they're helping that person gather all the information they need. You're also taking information that the driver's talking to the race engineer. The race engineer is asking the driver about, can these tires do 5 more laps? Because despite all the data in the world, we do not have particularly good metrics to say, hey, can these tires do 5 more laps? You literally have to ask the human behind the wheel. And all that information gets fed into the strategist, and they will make a call. Very often with most teams, the team principal, especially for when there's a decision which could have a negative impact on the other car, you present those concisely to the team principal on the pit wall. And they say, yes, go ahead, or no, I don't want that as an outcome.
Right.
The idea of the ability to predict what happens in Formula One in a race in terms of a strategy is absolutely down to very high levels of uncertainty. The thing that you do not know, particularly with any certainty, is how the tires will behave during the race.
How can he possibly drive this car with the tire in that condition? Even if you're on the road and a policeman saw that, he'd pull you over.
To get really geeky, you talk about something called an open air simulation, where you basically take your expectations of the lap times that the tire is likely to do as a function of its age, and you run through a bunch of simulations, like what if we stop on this lap? What if we stop on this lap? What if we fit this tire? And you run a bunch of simulations and you say, what is the fastest way to the end of this race? And that kind of tells you a good starting point.
One of the strategists once said, we're looking at 100,000 versions of permutations possible. We can't game all of them, but we've got, based on our experience and our knowledge, we've got a pretty good idea of what are those top 10, top 50 permutations that we should be spending energy and time on.
I guess they just want to feel like they're not surprised.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when they're looking, by the way, I mean, this feels important to say, but kind of makes sense. When they're looking at all of this data, they're not sat there anymore crunching it on pen and piece of paper, but they're using all of these incredible simulators to simulate all the different options available at them. But that also leads to why we have so many tech partners in Formula One,
right,
the likes of Cognizant and Salesforce and you name it, because they help these teams aggregate all of that data. So I think that's also why we have more data analysts in Formula One today than we used to back in the day.
Yeah, I can only imagine 80 years ago.
That wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case. That was probably much more what I'm talking about. Here's the keys. Go as fast as you can.
You know I'm going to say this, but you bring up a phenomenal
yes.
point, which is I was once asked, where does the driver put the key once they get into the car?
Yeah.
And the fun fact is,
fun fact,
even though it sounds logical, I don't think I've ever heard anyone actually tell me this, Formula One doesn't have a key because it takes 4 or 5 people to actually kickstart a Formula One engine.
Turn the car on.
And to turn it on.
So I just assumed the car was turned on with some computer back in Munich or whatever.
There you go, probably.
You know? You couldn't even have like a lucky rabbit's foot on your keychain because it'd be too much weight.
Too much weight. you do have drivers that stick a picture of their wives or the Virgin Mary or something.
I don't know if I'd want to be looking at my wife at 220 miles an hour. It might be better to look at the Virgin Mary.
Bless Bieber!
to each their own.
You've gathered some data about your car. you understand what you think is likely to happen with the hard, medium, and soft compound if you fit them during the race, and you've made some predictions about how they'll behave. But there's a range to those characteristics. You've also, in preparation of your strategy, made assumptions of how your competitors will behave in the race in terms of their tires. And then add the uncertainty that you have about your own car, couple that with the uncertainty of your competitor's car, and then you predict that you go into the race by lap five. Very often, your entire strategy plan is blown out of the window.
Wow.
And then it becomes about operational prowess, reading stuff that's outside of the data, reading the context, or most accurately or most correctly extrapolating from the data set that you have that's been completely destroyed that you thought is correct. It's now completely wrong. The ability to make observations about stuff that's happening on a sector by sector basis, not a lap by lap basis. Look at how other people are having. How is the other team behaving on the medium tire? Because they've been on it for two laps and that might be the right tire to be on right now. Did you observe that? And did you make that note that it's, you know, the medium tire is actually, you know what? It's a lot better than we thought it was before the race. The strategy has now changed in a complete different dimension. You also have other variables like what happens when the safety car comes out. Teams, at every point, let's say you've got your original plan and you've had a little bit of change. The tires are behaving differently, so you've adjusted your plan. You've also got to say, I've made all these adjustments, but now what happens if we have a safety car in two laps? What do we do? You don't wait for the safety car to happen and make the decision. You also have to say, if it's a safety car, what are we doing in the next five laps? And continually update that as your strategy plan evolves, because those are the kind of things like, you know, when there's a safety car, your pit stop loses you less time, but you might give up track position. And do you take that or not? Can you go to the end from that stop? Do you have to make two stops if you stop here? It's all of it is hinged on uncertainty, and it's reacting to that. Strategy is fascinating completely. And it's the fascinating bit which makes the sport enjoyable is the chaos that you have in the strategy.
I'm going to also rephrase game strategy as overthinking. I mean, I feel like, are they giving room for the athlete to drive the car and feel it?
You know what? That's actually one of my favorite things about the sport is at what point do you stop strategizing and planning and do you just race?
Yeah.
Or do you figure out, like, this is what we have, like, go for it? And at what point also do you trust the driver versus what's happening? So you'll see people on the pit will say,
is anyone else reporting rain?
We're expecting rain. And the driver's like, there's right. rain coming right. down on my helmet and my visor. What are you talking right. about? We're expecting rain. The rain is happening.
Sounds like it's just you that's reporting the rain. I suspect it might be the sweat.
And that is a trust that gets built over time between the race engineer and the actual driver. The other component of that the race engineer knows is this a rookie driver or is this a driver who's
right.
been driving for 10,
right.
15 years?
Right.
The reality is if it's a driver that's been driving for 10, 15 years, you trust their gut instinct and what they're telling you from what they're
right.
seeing. But that's also part of the communication. So to your point, actually, the race engineer is the only person really that talks to the driver, and the driver knows who is giving him
okay.
that information.
Okay.
But behind the race engineer, there's a myriad and
yes.
a myriad of people.
Sure.
One important thing that's actually also somewhat tied to the cost cap is you can't bring the entire team to the race weekend. So you generally have those five, six people on the pit wall. Then in the garage, you've got a bunch more engineers who are data analysts and strategists and looking at what the data that they're getting on their computers. But then there's a lot of people back at what they call, quote unquote, which sounds really fancy, mission control. Most of those teams are back in the UK and they look at all the info that's gathered and then they send that back to the people on the track or on the pit wall.
Okay, stand by at 13. We're looking.
But here's the interesting thing is you both need the people who are removed from the race and the people on the pit wall and the driver, because you want the people who are removed from everything that are able to take a step back and go, wait, hold on a minute. We have experience with this racetrack. We have experience
yeah.
with this weather forecast. This is what it's teaching us. Then you've got the people at the track who go, no, circumstances have changed. And then you've got the actual driver. There's a benefit to having those people remote.
Tony, I'm getting a message in my earpiece here from Mission Control. They want us to pause for some advertisements.
Roger that. We'll be right back.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. and you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
And back from our break and diving right into the strategy episode.
I'm just not as much, I'm not buying in as much to game strategy. It's not that you're not doing a good job convincing someone. It's just the athlete brain in me is saying, you've got to just let these drivers react and race and do what they do best.
But you've just said the magical word, which is react. Yeah. So to your point, that driver is not alone on the track. They're there with 19 other racers. Yes. And so they're not just reacting to the plan and what they think is going to be the best race strategy, but they're also having to look at what the other, their teammates is going to do, but also what the other drivers. So it's also about understanding the strategies of the 9 other teams. Something that I had never realized, there are people whose sole job or a big chunk of their job is listening to all of the other team radios.
That'd be fun.
That's fun.
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
All the teams can hear all the drivers' radio while they're on the circuit. You know, if they're talking about some specific, you know, setup stuff in the garage, once their cars are plugged into the umbilical, we call them, which transfers all the data, you can't hear the intercom then. But when the drivers are on the track, you can hear everything. And you will often hear other teams talking in code.
Bravo 07 on, please. Bravo 07 on.
We're on plan A. We're on plan F.
It's too late for plan G. We need to make this work.
And sometimes you have to ask the driver very directly. You know, there's no pre-scripted ways to ask, how's this? And you say, how's this tire behaving?
Would you like to have a new medium to go through the traffic or prefer a new hard? Question.
And the driver has to say, this tire is destroyed. It's 5 laps old. The front right tire is gone. You can't hide that from your competitors.
Come on, there's got to be some disinformation being thrown around.
Sometimes you can have a little bit of disinformation in terms of pit stop dummy calls.
So you know how when they come out for the pit stops, everyone's already in place and it's about 20, and it's a fair amount of people. It's 20 people get ready to do a pit stop. But sometimes you will hear on the radio saying, stay put, don't move. The idea for that is they're not giving any warning that they're about to send their driver in to box.
Right.
So they're asking the rest of the team in the garage to not look like they're getting ready. And so that's part of it that I just think is so fun. That's same fun. With the drivers. They'll say, hold it. And at the last minute.
So box. Stay up. Hey, man. No, sorry. Okay, just go.
There's a little bit of that, but honestly, teams struggle sometimes to tell the truth and get everything right. They're not going to play too many games and risk that going wrong. Like, oh, we were just joking. I thought we talked about that in the meeting.
I was at the entry, man. Are we in trouble?
A big risk.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really fun to hear the communication between an NFL football coach and the quarterback. And that's what this feels like.
Yes.
In F1, one of my favorite parts of the whole thing, besides trying to figure out what S, M, and H meant next to all the, was the radio communication.
Interesting.
Now, I am a communication major.
Okay, makes sense.
It's important to me.
Yeah.
And it's very important that people in my life are good communicators. Not just emotional communicators, actual words.
What do you want?
Clarity.
Yeah.
And that is so important at this level because you're going 200 miles an hour.
Yeah. To the point here where you don't just, it's not with your intonation that you guess that it's a question, but they actually spell out.
You do 5 more laps,
Question?
Question.
Copy?
I love that.
The other thing that's interesting.
It's very military.
Teams have spent time with experts that are from military backgrounds focusing on communication protocols and loops so that, you know, the idea being say the most information you can in the fewest words with no ambiguity in your message.
So box now, box.
Box now.
How's the balance? How's the balance?
How's the balance?
Maybe down touch.
You know, and then the engineer knows what to do with that.
Okay, understood.
The wealth of information and context you get from that is very clear. So that's going back to the point of, you know, the driver and engineer speaking a language. And that's not only that, that's clear communication between the driver and engineer. To add a little bit more context to that, when let's say my old job was performance engineer, and my job was to feed the race engineer with very specific information about the driver's performance and the car's performance. The race engineer also needs to talk to the strategist. He needs to talk to the control systems engineer, the tire technician who's preparing the tires. So if I'm going to tell my race engineer a message, I don't have 2 minutes to tell a message. That's a lap and a half. I'm going to tell him whatever message I need to tell him in less than 5 seconds. Questions have to be clear. Statements have to be clear. The brakes are on fire. Stop the car now is a very clear message. You know, that those are the kind of things. So the brake calipers are over the critical threshold. We have to do something now. And, you know, that's a very critical message that you need to be clear and concise. Intonation, clarity.
Or if you're Ferrari, you actually say question.
Can you do 10 more laps with this set? Question.
You know, here's a good thing. Talking about communication, Ferrari get a lot of abuse for when you hear the race engineer reply to the driver. The driver will ask the race engineer a question.
I think there's some smoke fucking out.
The race engineer says, you're checking.
Okay, copy that. We are checking it.
And people have made a meme about that. But that is a spectacular message. That message says, I've heard you, I've understood the question, and I'm asking the people who are experts at that thing to look into that thing for you.
I'm on it.
You know, because if you ignore the driver's driving around 100% flat out, steam coming out of their ears. Did the engineer hear me? Was my message clear? It's like, we're checking. And usually, you know, the meme misses out when they come back. No, everything's fine.
No, 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 no.
And then the car catches on fire.
No, 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 no.
Yep.
Sounds like race engineers would make phenomenal husbands. I've heard you. I'm actioning your request. I'll be right back.
I'm choosing to ignore you now.
At least you know what's happening.
I would assume drivers are not encouraged to text and drive.
Not expected to check your emails during the race.
Yeah. I've sent a lot of emails while driving. I hate to admit it.
We got another thing we hope our listeners will not take an example of from Michael.
The thing that I love about all of this is most people's first language isn't English.
Right.
So everyone just speaks bad English.
Right.
And everything gets lost in communication and translation. And it's kind of wild that these drivers are expected to make decisions on communication at the beat of a second.
Do they all agree to use English just because it's the most universal, or do they have to?
They have to.
Yeah.
Two reasons for that. One is broadcast rights. It's so that everyone who tunes in can actually get it in they call the default language, which is English. I believe the two accepted, most widely accepted languages across the paddock is actually English, French, and Italian a lot because of Ferrari.
Right.
But as we discussed, Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile is actually a French federation.
Right.
So French is a big, you know, a big language throughout the paddock as well.
Even like communication.
Yeah.
This human component is so important in this sport.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. You know, in the sport I come from, tennis, the coach, they're now allowed to coach. That's a new, and they're kind of just, they're kind of going like, move forward. You know, and they do the thing with their hand, or it's like, back up. But it's like caveman communicating.
Yeah.
You listen to an F1 race and it's like, they have secret codes. They've met on what plan this means. You know, it's at such a heightened level.
Yeah.
I think if we were all honest with ourselves, we would admit that when we drive our cars and talk on the phone, we're bad at both.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bad on the phone and I'm bad driving. Or I'm worse.
Yes.
Like, it's made me worse. Maybe not a bad driver on the phone, but I'm not as attuned. And these drivers are driving competitive, professionally, for money, 200 miles an hour, and having a very direct, quick conversation with somebody.
It's a skill. The ability to drive a racing car at 200 plus miles an hour, you know, insane cornering and braking forces on the body, feeling what's happening, they're physically exerting themselves, then they're perceiving what the car is doing and how the car is behaving, and then they're thinking of something else that the engineer asked them about a corner ago, replying to that while still continually processing all that information as they're going around the track. And we refer to that as bandwidth or CPU that a driver has. A driver that's able to drive quickly, perceive what the car is doing, be able to tell an engineer what the car is doing if they're asked, and then also engage in a conversation about something else that's happening. Drivers that have a high bandwidth or high big CPU, they can do all of that. Some drivers might struggle a little bit at first. For example, I talked to Liam Lawson the other day about his first time driving the AlphaTauri. And he told me that he spent the entire time between when he knew that he was going to drive the AlphaTauri car until he got into the car, talking to the engineers about the switches and settings and operation of the steering wheel in the car.
Can you learn that? Is that a skill that you can acquire? You don't, or you do come to the table with that skill?
I think you learn it. Once you get really good at the driving the car fast bit, your CPU load reduces and then you have more capacity to take on board other things. But we've even seen Max Verstappen at times. Don't tell me lap times. Leave me alone. I need to get to the end.
Please, no talking. I need the braking.
This is why I can't wait. And this is cheeky, but this is why I can't wait for us to have actually more women on the grid, because they're phenomenal at multitasking.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, if men are capable of doing that, just you wait until the women who are so used to multitasking come there and who have great communication skills.
Well, so, I was going to add a little communication dig there, but that's something we'll save for in season three.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. You said like one stop, two stop. That's yes, referring to pit stops.
Correct.
And why is that such a big difference? Because the pit stops I've seen in Formula One are under 2 seconds.
So there's two ways to look at the pit stop. There's the pit stop, which is the changing of the wheels. Nowadays, we don't refuel and we don't change anything else unless there's a crash and you need to change the wing as well.
Because they're not allowed to refuel, right?
They're not allowed to refuel. That was banned, then brought back, then banned again, mostly for safety reasons.
Okay.
We had some, actually, Jos Verstappen, Max Verstappen's father, got into a terrible pit stop crash refueling moment, which wasn't pretty.
Had a fuel splash. Oh my goodness me. Well now, just let's keep calm.
Didn't stop him from sending his son to race.
No, right.
Absolutely didn't.
Wait, like, so you're racing on the same tank of gas the whole time?
Yes. And you bring up another point, which is when we're thinking about the permutations of the strategy, you need to account for the fact that the car gets lighter and lighter.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
Which is why, by the way, if you've ever looked, when they do their times during quali or free practice sessions, they're doing it on a much lighter tank because they're only using what they need for that quali session, which means also that the car is lighter, which means they can go a little bit faster.
I mean, I've looked at these cars. I don't see how they could fit enough gas to go 300 kilometers at that high a speed.
It's interesting, and we will need experts to help us
please
on this.
Find it nice to have an expert around here.
Fuel strategy was one of my old jobs when I was a performance engineer at the track. So my job was to say, how much fuel do we need to put in the car? Are we going to have to save fuel during this race and communicate that clearly with the engineer and driver? Say, hey, we filled the tanks and you're going to have to lift and coast at the end of every straight for the start of the race to save fuel. You know, and that's a really important thing. Lifting and coasting is a very efficient way to save fuel without losing lap time. And that's your goal. Go as least slow as possible, right? So, you know, that is fine. And then you say, right, well, we're saving fuel following this car. We, you know, we're not going as quickly as we thought. We're not burning as much fuel. How does that impact our fuel strategy? Okay, do we, you know what? We're going to not have to save fuel later in the race as a result of following this car or something else has happened. Or let's say, again, going back to the slow car, let's say that you're 5 years ago in your car at the back of the field, you're not going to do the entire race distance. You might finish a lap down. So you can take literally one whole lap's worth of fuel out of the car. Do you do that or not? Because if there's a safety car, you might be back on the lead lap, but you will have saved fuel under the safety car. So there's all sorts of coulda, woulda, shouldas. And very rarely, I think, in modern Formula One, can you be a hero by being aggressive on fuel, because there is no refueling.
you also need to ensure that you finish the race with at least 1 liter of fuel in your tank so that the FIA, that bring back the FIA, can test to ensure that they're using the right kind of fuel that they will allow you to use. If you do not finish the race and you don't still have a liter of fuel, your race is done for.
Right.
Lots of pickup on the way in, lots of pickup, super slow on the way in. Save fuel.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Insane planning to have it be that way.
That's it.
Yeah.
Going back to the pit stops, though.
Yes.
Two aspects to know about the pit stops. You've got the actual pit stop changing of the tires, which that is generally sub 2 seconds. That's what they aim for. I think the fastest this year was 1.8 seconds.
Change all four wheels in 1.8 seconds.
Yeah.
Can we stop for a second just to appreciate that?
Why don't we actually stop for 1.8 seconds?
Sure.
Ready? And we're done.
Boom.
Then you've got the actual pit stop time, which is going into the pit lane, driving slower because you have to obviously load us incoming out. And that's around 15 to 20 seconds.
Okay.
So there's two ways of looking at it. So when you think about a one pit stop or a two pit stop, it also depends on which tire you've got on. Mm-hmm. You have to change your tires at least once and do soft compound or hard compound or medium compound. And there's a whole conversation that we will have about that in the tire
looking
episode.
Looking forward to it.
But you basically map out that on a soft tire, they will last less long, but you will go faster than on a hard compound tire. And so this is some part of the game theory is, do we do soft tires where we can faster, but we're definitely going to have to do two pit stops to then change them onto something else? Or do we start with hard tires where they're going to last a lot longer, but we're going to go not as fast? And so you're trying to game also what everyone else is doing, which is why when you watch a race, you will see next to every name if they've got a H or if they've got an S or if they've got an M to tell you what tires they are on.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
I do wonder, there's so many more people, personnel, staff, than the driver.
Yeah.
But the driver actually has, in this case, his hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
Is the driver just a pawn in this game? I mean, clearly these are super ego athletes who believe they should be at the helm of a rocket ship.
Yeah.
So you got to let them do their thing. But basically you're saying the game strategist is like, hey, do this, turn here, turn left here, you're pitting here. So if F1 is a chess game, then these drivers are just the pawns. Is that what you're saying?
No, I
just... Let me just check in with the game strategist and I'll do whatever they tell me.
That is a great, great question, because at the end of the day, the driver can say, I would like to do 40 laps on this soft tire. It's like, hey, buddy, we've looked at your teammates or your competitors. They're doing 15 laps on that tire. You could do 16. If you do 20 laps on this tire, you're going to lose 4 positions. Done. You know, that those are the kind of conversations. And through time, you build up rapport between the driver and engineer. And at the same time, also the drivers have a reasonable understanding of expectations and then leave it to the engineers to help refine those expectations as they learn more during a race or during a season. But yeah, the drivers for sure have ultimate say. And very many times you will do things that don't make sense because the data says this isn't possible. The driver says, no, don't worry, I can definitely do 5 more laps. You trust the driver on those situations very often. But they don't know everything.
I actually don't know of any other sport where the main athlete celebrates the rest of their team as much as they do in Formula One. You will often hear, even Max Verstappen gets a lot of hate, more or less every race, at the end of every race, will say,
what an unbelievable rocket ship that was today. That was so enjoyable to drive.
Thank you to the team. That was a great call. That was phenomenal strategy. Strategy well executed.
I think everyone can be really proud. That was unbelievable. Thank you.
And he's not the only one. Most Lewis Hamilton is the same. Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz. They all generally, when they have a really good race, you will hear them say, phenomenally well executed.
Yeah.
That was the great call. Or when it's bad, they'll say, hey, we need to regroup and talk about this. This wasn't good. I think it's one of those that you can build the fastest car in the world if you don't have the right driver. Great, you've got a fastest car that's not going anywhere.
Right.
You can have the best strategist in the world that can play out the whole thing. But if the race engineer isn't taking the right decision and communicating that to the driver in the right time and the driver isn't executing, then what's the point? And I think it's that connection between all of those pieces that just makes this sport so spectacular. Even the logistical team of Formula One, if the car parts are not arriving on time,
fun fact,
all teams can only start unloading all of their cargoes and opening everything once everyone has received their cargo. So if there's a team that's delayed, everyone is delayed, which again, I like. It's like, you know, we're all, and they all talk about
Tony,
it.
Tony, you forgot to pack the steering wheel.
Damn.
Oh, shit. And the whole race is canceled.
And you will actually, I know this is not the strategists and this is more the engineers, but the engineers and the mechanics will often talk about the camaraderie amongst the teams.
Right.
They're like, on the track, we take it all out. On the track, we are not friends. We are foes. We are enemies. One of us is winning. Everyone else is not winning. But if you miss a hammer or a screwdriver or a component, we're going to help you. Because if we were in that situation. So there's a camaraderie there amongst the teams. And I think you can see that on the team as well.
Starting to feel like a huge team sport.
Oh, my God. That's so perfect. And it is a team sport. And it goes back to the first part of the conversation we had. You have the driver, you have the car, and you have the team operationally. All three of those things have to be in harmony. Otherwise, the best driver in the world with the best car in the world on the worst strategy will not win.
I'll tell you what else isn't going to win, a podcast with no funding.
Yes, let's break for our sponsors and we'll be right back.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
And we're back.
So, this seems obvious, but game strategy is about decisions made during the race.
No, yeah. There's a whole, like, yeah, that's really good. Because when we talk about strategy, we're talking about stuff in isolation, but you have other strategic considerations. For example, teams are limited by the number of power units or, you know, the engine and electrical systems together. What if you could find half a second lap of performance, but you had to fit five more engines? And when you fit a certain amount of engines outside of your allocation, you start taking grid penalties. So there's definitely times in which you're considering that. Even bigger strategies and considering the broader scope of the season is developments. For example, which car upgrades are you going to bring where? Do you want to bring a new car package to a weekend when you only get one practice session? Or let's say the first half of the season is all tracks that want a lot of downforce. Are you going to develop a wing for your car that's low downforce in the first part of the season? No, you're waiting until you need that low downforce wing. You don't need your huge wing until Monaco, and that covers you for Singapore. You don't need your super low wing until Spa or Monza, which covers you for the other one of those. But yeah, so understanding the season as a whole, understanding what's important when also influences stuff that's happening at the factory in terms of the design and build of these cars rather than what's happening on the weekend. And that's a whole different strategy in a whole different can of worms.
So not just, hey, pit stop in right now. They're also looking at overall
everything,
building the team, getting the right driver, blah, blah, blah.
Everything that's like a data point they are looking at and bringing in. Teams are always looking to, which is what I love, always looking at the next thing. They're like, cool, cool, we've got yeah. this car. What does next year's car look like? And that's what was interesting by this year is 2022, there was the biggest overhaul of changes and the car was fundamentally different than anything that we'd seen before. And some people, some teams were going to, you know, come out the door swinging and have a phenomenal mm-hmm. teams and a phenomenal car. And some teams were going to come out and go, oh, we missed it like pretty badly. But that's what was exciting about this season in 2023, because everyone was able to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, cool. We know what works. We know what doesn't. If something did work, let's focus on that more. But it is always like a forward-thinking, future-thinking sport.
You know, none of this communication can happen if the internet is lousy.
Oh, yeah.
That's another. Is that, would that fall under the logistic part?
Yes.
Okay, that'll
See,
be fun.
See, getting the cable setup.
Cables.
These races are insane. They the cable guys, and they're mostly men, but the cable teams arrive on the Monday before, like the next day.
They
after
arrive Monday, but they give you a window.
Uh-huh. And yeah,
they're going to show up between 12 and 8.
Oh, no,
and just
they
have to
military. They show up at 7 a.m. and they're laying the cables.
I wish cable would.
Logistics is everything.
Oh, okay, Yohai. I'll just determine what's.
I'll be the judge
I'll
of
be
that.
The judge.
Yeah, if you think the cable management system we have got going here is you know, tricky and alarm.
Right.
Just you wait.
Yeah. I do find it interesting to learn about F1 strategy. A lot of this is new to me. There's a lot of factors, ins and outs that never would have occurred to me. And I'm realizing now, going forward, maybe we could have a new strategy. You just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. I'll be a good little George Russell, and I'll go pit whenever you want me to.
So we're going back to plan A then? I'm going to need communication. I'm going to need a yes.
Back to plan A, non-question.
Non-question.
Statement.
This has been Choosing Sides, F1, a production of Sports Illustrated Studios, iHeart Podcast, and 101 Studio Podcast. The show is hosted by Michael Costa and Tony Cowan-Brown. This episode was edited, scored, and sound designed by senior producer Yochai Meital. Scott Stone is the executive producer and head of audio, and Danielle Wexman is director of podcast development and production manager at 101 Studios. At iHeart Podcast, Sean Titone is our executive producer. And a special thank you to Michelle Newman, David Glasser, and David Hutkin from 101 Studios. For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, go visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And whatever you do, don't forget to rate us and tell your friends. It really does mean a lot.
Next week on Choosing Sides F1, the data analyst, we will go into why some Formula One fans like watching the race with not one, not two, not three, but at least 5 to 10 different screens open simultaneously.
Wow.
Yep. And also why some of the nerdier, or shall we say more tech-savvy fans, are reverting to writing specific code to actually help them watch and understand and ultimately enjoy the pinnacle of motorsports to its fullest.
What?
Yep.
That's too much.
We've only got one screen. Like
writing code to enjoy. Okay, we'll get into it. C'est la vie, mon ami.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip.
That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.